morning, everyone. This is Jax, and welcome to Good Old Days, where we get to listen to some old country and southern rock music, all while getting to know its history and background here on radio.dominican.edu. Quick little side note, last Monday was my first show, but Penguin Radio was just being weird and wasn't really cooperating with me, so all you heard was some static, so that sucks, but in good news, in my first show, I did explain a bit about classic country and southern rock, and we kind of compared those older genres to the current genres nowadays, and I also gave my reasons for loving that music so much and how this music has grown on me. If you guys are curious about that at all, go ahead and you can check out the first show on Dominican's radio website. But just a quick overview of Good Old Days in general. Basically, what will happen is I'll play three oldie songs that are just my favorites from back in the day. And we'll talk about them, and then we'll wrap up the hour with one modern song, most likely a mainstream country one. But who knows? I could mix it up, maybe. That way we get a little bit of variety in there. Okay, so now on with the show. Show number two. Technically, this will be our first show, but really it's the second one, but it's the first one that airs. Okay, so I want to jump right into our first song of the day. Here is Gator Country by Molly Hatchet.
I'm going back to the Gator Country with the wine and the women of the
right. So that was Molly Hatchet with their song Gator Country. Lynyrd Skynyrd, they honestly came before these guys for me, but I feel like it's because of Skynyrd that I even started listening to some Molly Hatchet. Molly Hatchet, it was just one of those bands that I had heard of, but I wasn't, you know, that familiar with them. And I'd listen to them like literally maybe once in a blue moon. And I only had maybe two or three songs by Molly Hatchet, but I never really listened to them that often. And I never really got, I hate to say it now, it's so weird to say it now, I never really got that interested in them. However, back in, I think it was either May or June, I don't really remember, I don't recall, I met my advisor here at Dominican to get my schedule for this semester, and I was actually wearing one of my many Lynyrd Skynyrd shirts, and he actually recommended Molly Hatchet to me because they were so similar to Lynyrd Skynyrd. So I was like, like, I've already heard him, but fine, okay, I'll give it like another shot. And I'm so glad I did. And now I really do enjoy this band and their songs. They're actually in second place right after Lynyrd Skynyrd for my all-time favorite Southern rock bands. And I just love their music. I don't really know how I didn't before, but important thing is now I do, right? So let's discuss Molly Hatchet. Molly Hatchet was formed in Jacksonville, Florida. That might sound familiar because that's exactly where Skynyrd came from. And about the band's name, there's different ideas about how the name came to be. One seems to rule out majority. Apparently, the band's name was based off an interesting character and her legend. According to the stories, Molly Hatchet was a prostitute from the 17th century, and supposedly she would specifically target wealthy men, and after they, I'm keeping it PG here, so after they finished their, we'll call it business, she would mutilate and then decapitate her clients with her weapon of choice. All right, and now we just ruined the PG thing, and I kind of made it PG-13, but oh well. So as you guys have probably put two and two together by now, Molly's weapon was a hatchet, hence her name, Molly Hatchet. And that's so long ago. I feel like in the 17th century, like, I didn't even think that they would have hatchets back then. I'm just picturing really Stone Age weapons, even though it's really not that, like, it's not the period of the Stone Age, but I'm just picturing like sticks and homemade spears. I don't know. But then again, maybe it was like before Lizzie Borden or whatever. Who knows? So that was the story behind Molly Hatchet. So it's still being debated whether she was an urban legend or if she was in fact a real life killer or a crazy, you know, axe murderess who beheaded her victims. We'll never know for sure unless we find a time machine and go back to the 1600s. So that's the story behind the name Molly Hatchet. As horrible as, you know, the story is, I actually think that the name itself has a really nice ring to it. Maybe not nice, that's not the best word for it, but it's definitely, it's like catchy. I think it fits a group like this one. So besides Lynyrd Skynyrd, Molly Hatchet just embodies Southern rock to me. This genre, it did begin in the early 1970s, and it took off mainly because of bands like Skynyrd and because of Molly Hatchet. And Southern rock music is a mixture of some gospel, some country, some rock and roll, and blues. And indeed, I feel like Molly Hatchet always incorporates that mixture into their songs. I feel like you can always kind of hear that specific mix that they add into their albums and whatnot. So currently, let's talk about the band. The band consists of six guys, some who've been members of Molly Hatchet for quite a long time, but I want to backtrack to the very first members, to the original group. The first members who put out Molly Hatchet's debut album back in 1978 were Danny Joe Brown, Dave Lubeck, Steve Holland, Dwayne Roland, maybe I just want McDonald's and I'm thinking like Ronald McDonald, I don't know. So we have Dwayne Roland, Bruce Crump, and Banner Thomas. And let's start with Danny Joe Brown. I'm going to call him DJB for now. We'll just use his initials to kind of shorten it up. He did the band's vocals, and he was the man behind two of Molly Hatchet's well-known songs. One was Flirtin' with Disaster, and the other was Whiskey Man. Really awesome songs. You guys should definitely listen to those. And he sung those, but he also wrote the lyrics for them. And then going back to Dave Hlubeck was guitar. Steve Holland was guitar. Dwayne Roland also played the guitar. So they had, in their classic lineup, they had three lead guitars. And, I mean, that's just great for any band, because you can seriously hear them on those albums that they did. It's like, oh, definitely three guitars, definitely. And then we had Bruce Crump on the drums. And last but not least, we had Banner Thomas, who played bass. And that was, you know, the classic lineup for that album. That was the original guys. So that first self-titled album, it was extremely successful. It sold 1 million copies, and it also got a platinum certificate from the RIAA. That stands for the Recording Industry Association of America. So that's a big deal right there. That's awesome. And to top that off, their next album, which was Flirtin' with Disaster, it sold double of what their first sold, and they received a double platinum certificate. And, you know, Molly Hatchet's success, it was obviously growing and growing, and they were gaining even more popularity, and that increased the demand for their performances. And this took quite a big toll on DJ B, because he had diabetes and really severe pancreatic problems, and it was really starting to affect his ability to perform. And in 1980, that's when DJ B, he made the decision to leave the band for his health. And a few years after that, very short recovery period, Danny Joe Brown returned and came back to Molly Hatchet, and they put out more albums with him on vocals once again. But unfortunately, that didn't last either. In 1998, DJ B was forced to leave the band for a second time after he had a stroke. This guy just didn't give up. He put up a good fight, but in the end, he decided to officially make the right move, I think, and retire from Molly Hatchet and the music world. And he went back to his home in Florida, where he unfortunately passed away at the age of 53. And that's Danny Joe Brown's, the summary of his journey with Molly Hatchet. The original singer and one of the great roles in the band's achievements, this guy really, he was, you know, one of the founding members, and I really feel like the spirit of Molly Hatchet. So jumping back, I want to go back to the 1980s when DJ B left Molly Hatchet for the first time. He reconnected with Bobby Ingram, who he had known from before, because they had a previous connection from the former band called Rum Creek. And during this time, this might be kind of confusing. Molly Hatchet's like history is just all over the place. But at that time, Danny Joe Brown and Ingram, they started the Danny Joe Brown Band. So this was separate from Molly Hatchet. Danny Joe Brown, they started the, you know, his band, and then Molly Hatchet kept doing their own thing. And they brought in John Galvin, who played the keyboards. And that band toured until 1982. So John Galvin did join the Danny Joe Brown Band, and they did tour for several years. So meanwhile, while DJB's brand was going around, this is so many tongue twisters right now. This is killing me. But meanwhile, during that time, Jimmy Fair took DJB's place as vocals, and with him as the new lead singer, Molly Hatchet recorded Be in the Odds in the year 1980, and in 1982, it was Take No Prisoners. So with Fair as lead vocals, the band sound, it did change a bit. You could kind of hear like a really slight sound difference, and they took a new approach to their music. It's still, in my opinion, it's still really good. I don't really prefer Danny Joe Brown over, you know, one of the singers, but you can definitely hear a change in the guitar tone and their original Southern roots, and they kind of were sounding more of like a hard rock sound, which worked in favor of Molly Hatchet because of the heavy rock influences during the 1980s, because that's when you kind of had like Van Halen coming out and all that. So it worked in their favor. So when DJ B returned for the second comeback to Molly Hatchet, 1 year after that, that's when John Galvin, the guy who played the keyboards, he joined in place of guitarist Steve Holland, which ended the band's trademark for having three of the lead guitars. But the band, you know, they continued to release more albums, and the new addition of keyboards, it worked with the rest of the band. It still added a new sound, but it made it more of like an orchestra-sounding thing, and it worked. You know, they didn't really lose any fan base off of it, so that's good. I'm trying to keep it simple or else I'm going to confuse myself too, because the history of Molly Hatchet is just, it's so much, so much history, you guys. This is how I used to feel like back in history class. So currently, now, this is present day, there are six members in Molly Hatchet. There is Bobby Ingram, who joined from Danny Joe Brown's band. He is on lead guitar, slide, and acoustic. You have Phil McCormick for lead vocals and harmonica. So Phil McCormick now is the lead singer. Dave Hlubeck, who also took a pretty big break from the band, only to come back after a while. He does lead guitar as well as vocals. Then there's John Galvin with keyboards. He also plays an organ, specifically the Hammond B3, and he does more background vocals. For bass guitar and vocals, we have Tim Lindsay. And then Sean Beamer does drums and percussion. And that is Molly Hatchet right now. Yeah. So love that band. You guys should definitely check it out. Their sound is just, it's cool. I don't know how to explain it, and I can't really say the word for it. They just make you feel like a tough, I don't know. I feel like a tough guy. Every time I hear it, I'm like envisioning myself just like riding around on a Harley being like, yeah, mess with me now. But they're cool. They're really, really good. Okay, so now we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll get right back into the show. So don't go away. Stay tuned.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that
you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. Welcome to Bosco's Breaks. The sudden death last month of 63-year-old comedian and actor Robin Williams was ruled to be suicide by Marin County authorities. While suicide was the event that ended Williams' life, the why behind the event is complex. Williams' publicist Mara Boxbaum released a statement that Williams had been seeking treatment for severe depression. The word suicide can leave the impression that it is an individual's choice or decision to die. Dr. Stephen Ilardi, author of The Depression Cure and associate professor of psychology at the University of Kansas, has found that because depression is such a misunderstood condition, there are a lot of people who have little sympathy for those who resort to suicide. Ilardi says depression is a mental illness, not a lifestyle choice. Like cancer or any other disease, it is unavoidable, but unlike cancer, it is more often than not a hidden illness. According to Save.org, a website devoted to suicide awareness, suicide takes the lives of nearly 40,000 Americans every year, making it the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. Considering that one person takes their own life every 14 minutes in the U.S. alone, experts say there's clearly much more to discover about the brain's processing in order to battle the illness and stereotypes surrounding it. Although Williams' suicide was both shocking and heartbreaking to many, it signifies the challenges involved with treating depression and other mental illnesses in general. According to mental health experts, effective medications and treatments are available for even the most severe cases of depression. Nonetheless, the approach to finding which remedy will succeed can be a frustrating experience and can lead to a delay in a patient's recovery. Depression is currently treated with both medication and therapy, but there's still room for improvement, according to Dr. Winston Chung, a psychiatrist at the Cedar Pacific Medical Foundation, who specializes in mental and mood disorders. Chung also said that researchers need to better understand the biology of mental health issues in order to reduce the stigma and produce more accurate treatment. If you or a student in need is looking for a campus resource, you may seek the Dominican University's counseling service by calling 415-485-3258. These appointments are free to all students, available Monday through Friday, and are completely confidential. That number was 415-485-3258. Along with the campus resource, there are many resources in the San Francisco Bay Area for anyone suffering from depression or suicidal thoughts. The Suicide Prevention Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. The San Francisco General Hospital Psychiatric Emergency Services can be called at 415-206-8125. The San Francisco Suicide Prevention 24-hour hotline can be reached at 415-781-0500. Thanks for listening.
Alrighty, so now on to our classic country song for show number two of Good Old Days. Here is Don Williams with his song, I Recall a Gypsy Woman.
Silver coins that jingle jangle, fancy shoes that dance in time, oh, the secrets of her dark eyes, they did sing a gypsy rhyme. Yellow clover in tangled blossoms, in a meadow silky green, where she held me to her bosom, just a boy of 17. I recall a gypsy woman, silver spangles in her eyes, ivory skin against the moonlight, and the taste of life's sweet wine. Soft breezes blow from fragrant meadows, stir the darkness in my mind. Oh, gentle woman, you sleep beside me and little know who haunts my mind. Gypsy lady, I hear your laughter, and it dances in my head, while my tender wife and babies slumber softly in their beds. I recall a gypsy woman, silver spangles in her eyes, ivory skin against the moonlight, and the taste of life's sweet wine.
Right, so that was Don Williams with his song, I Recall a Gypsy Woman. Mr. Williams was born in Texas on May 27th in 1939. Here's a little fun fact. He got the nickname the Gentle Giant because of his mellow yet genuine vocals, which I'm sure you guys just heard in that song. And he was also super tall, and he had like a towering frame. I know he was over 6 foot, like 6'1", 6'2", who knows. But yeah, so that's how he got the nickname the Gentle Giant, and it fits. That's a good one. You know how sometimes you hear those nicknames that's just like, how did you come up with it? Like, it makes no sense. But this one, it actually is sensible. So this guy had 17 number one hits. All 17 of these are perfect, in my opinion. I'm going to read them all to you, and you guys should definitely try to check out just a few of them at least. So here we go. His first was, I wouldn't want to live if you didn't love me. Turn out the light and love me tonight. Say it again till the rivers all run dry. You're my best friend. Some broken hearts never mend. Oh, that rhymed. You're my best friend. Some broken hearts never mend. Ooh. Okay. Moving right along. I'm Just a Country Boy was another hit of his. Then It Must Be Love. Tulsa Time. Love Me Over Again. I Believe You. Lord, I Hope This Day Is Good. I say that every morning. As soon as I actually roll out of bed, I look out the window and I say, like, Lord, I hope this day is good. I say it, though. I don't sing it, because as soon as I hear my singing voice, it would just, it would ruin any chance at that day being good. So I just say it. Next number one was If Hollywood Don't Need You. Then Love Is On a Roll. Stay Young. That's The Thing About Love. And finally, he had Heartbeat in the Darkness. So plenty of love songs in that list. What a romantic guy. And a pretty darn good career right there. Seriously, that's, oof. All these guys just, I don't know. I feel like a lot of the people I listen to are just so successful because they've had careers that have, like, stretched over decades. And this guy is one of them. So going back to his beginnings, his first experience in music was with his first band back in the 1960s, the Pozo Seco Singers. After the band dispersed, Don Williams became a songwriter, thinking that he wasn't really cut out for a solo career. So he's just like, okay, I'm going to stick with, you know, songwriting only. And he did get signed for songwriting to Jack Music Inc. First as a songwriter, and then he did end up becoming a solo artist for the label in 1972. His debut song wasn't too successful, which is funny because the rest were very popular. So, and usually I feel like, you know, the first song is like that really, really good one, and then it kind of slowly starts going downhill from there. But with him, it was the opposite way. He started, you know, kind of low, and then he just went up from there. So it worked out. By the mid-70s, Williams was an outstanding country artist. He not only had success in the United States, but he also expanded his music into England and even more areas around Europe. And along with his several hits, he earned plenty of country music awards, including the 1978 Male Vocalist of the Year. Yay! And he won Winning Single of the Year with Tulsa Time. Yay for Don Williams. After a booming career, Don Williams slowed it down a bit, so it never got too chaotic for him. And he did. He continued singing and putting out hits. The last hit from his top 10 singles came in 1992. That's kind of when his streak ended. But, which, you know, time to give other people a shot at being number one. And that song was Lord Have Mercy on a Country Boy. But he still recorded some great songs after that, and he keeps some albums coming. And Williams actually released his album Reflections earlier this year in March. And, you know, the guy's in his 70s, and he's still not finished yet, which I'm so thankful for. So that is The Great Gentle Giant. Okay, up next is our last Southern rock tune for the day. These guys are called the Kentucky Headhunters, and this is their song Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine here on radio.dominican.edu.
You won't be
right, so that was the Kentucky Headhunters with their song Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine from their album Pickin' on Nashville from 1989. The Kentucky Headhunters, they were a group of guys from Metcalf County in Kentucky, and it all began in 1968 with a band called Itchy Brother, and they would practice in a farmhouse on members Richard and Fred Young's family farm. So really the band was originally a family thing with brothers Richard and Fred and their cousins Greg Martin and Anthony Kenny. And they all began a musical career. And then as the band's history kind of got established and went on, members continually started going in and out of the group. I like to think a lot of... That's because I'm losing my voice every time that I mute my mic and you guys hear the song. I'm actually singing in the studio, so I think I might be losing my voice a bit. Anyway, so I really like to think of the Kentucky Headhunters musical career as like a game of musical chairs, just because you guys will see this, but I feel like if, you know, one member left, then they would like tag team another to like come in, and they would always do like swaps and switches. It's a lot like a game of musical chairs. You guys will see in a minute. So anyways, back to Itchy Brother. They remained a band until 1982, and that's when they broke up, and each of them, you know, Fred, Richard, Anthony, and Greg, they all went separate ways and did their own thing for a while. They did, however, they stayed in the music business, just not as Itchy Brother. They, you know, split up and they were solo artists. So a few years went by, and in 1986, Greg Martin decided to bring the band together, and he got Richard and Fred Young back on board, but their fourth member, Kenny, he declined and he did not rejoin. So Greg introduced the Young brothers to Doug Phelps, and he was Anthony Kenny's replacement. So at that point, you had, you know, Doug Phelps, Greg Martin, and the two Young brothers. Eventually, Doug's brother, Ricky Phelps, was brought into the group, completing the Kentucky Headhunters and their own musical style of rock, jazz, blues, country, and bluegrass into their songs. So at this point, they had how many members is that? Is that five? Yeah, five. Alrighty, and then, that's not where it stops, then the band switched it up again with the release of Electric Barnyard. After the second album was released in, I want to say it was like June, July, we'll call it the middle, because that is the middle of a year, right? In the middle of 1992, the Phelps brothers, they left the Headhunters to start a new career as a pair, as a dynamic duo. And with their departure, that's when Anthony Kenny came to the rescue and he rejoined the group, as well as newcomer singer Mark Orr. So, you know, two left, and then that's when Kenny and Mark Orr came back in. More albums were released, and a couple of years later, Mark Orr left the Kentucky Headhunters, and then Doug Phelps came back. See what I'm saying? Like, two go out, two come in, one goes out, one comes in. And now the band's members, officially, it's been like this for a while, the band's members are Greg Martin, Doug Phelps, Fred Young, and his brother Richard. No more Kenny. Kenny, he retired from the Kentucky Headhunters in 2007, so the band's at four. It's almost the original four, but I mean, Doug Phelps is really close enough, I guess. He was a member for quite a while. So we still have Martin on lead guitar and background vocals. Doug Phelps plays bass guitar and also helps with the vocals. Fred does drums and additional percussion. And Richard plays guitar, and he is the band's lead singer now. Alrighty, so quite a journey for those guys. And that's incredible that with the constant changes that this group, you know, still kept it going, and they still kept making really good music, which resulted in some pretty fantastic songs, that one being one of them. Okay, you guys, so those were our three oldies for today. So now let's move into our last segment for a more modern song. I just want to take another small break, and then We will be right back to good old days.
Baby boy the prince, beat time on Cash Monroe, extreme entertainment. Ooh,
this is the way I live. Little boy still pushing big wheels. I stack my money.
You're on a Bosco break. Thanks for listening. At many universities, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender community is a visible and valued part of campus life. You are likely to find more resources, more programs, and a much wider dating pool. Students who are struggling or questioning their identity often find it easier to explore and accept who they are in college. Most schools have a dedicated club, and many offer a major or minor in LGBT studies. Despite these efforts, students who are or are perceived to be a member of the LGBT community still face harsh realities in some schools. Luckily, Dominican is not one of those campuses. Most Dominican students report that they would consider the DU campus LGBT-friendly and a welcoming place to all students. One of Dominican students, Ariana Fleming, has created a club on campus dedicated to celebrating diversity, promoting acceptance, advocating equality, and providing community. The club has been named the Pride Club, People Respecting Identity, Dignity, and Equality. Pride Club meets with purposes as diverse as its membership, which is inclusive to any sexuality, gender, or self-identification. The club gathers Thursday nights at 8 p.m. with the goal of allowing students to make connections, find comfort in a similar community, and spread awareness about LGBT issues. Pride believes in the power of education as a means of combating widespread hatred against the LGBT community and also works to offer a safe space for all individuals to gain support and be heard. Outside of Pride, there aren't a lot of open discussions about the issue. Universities are places of learning and also numerous micro-societies. The environment of a university has a direct impact on how well students learn, as well as how they interact with each other. As a freshman, Fleming felt isolated and depressed. In time, her loneliness began to take a toll on her schoolwork and affected the future of her career at Dominican. Fleming expressed, "It's unfair for students to feel unsafe and uncomfortable being who they are. I felt deep in my heart that creating the club needed to happen." The club began when she decided that she did not want another person feeling as alone as she did her freshman year. She told all of her friends to tell everyone they knew to meet the next day for the first official Pride Club meeting. Fleming welcomes all to join and reaches out to the student body by expressing, "We're here if you need us, but there's no pressure to come. The club is anonymous, so people who don't want to be identified or associated will not be." Professors work hard to ensure their classes are welcoming atmospheres in which students feel valued. According to Tolerance.org, creating a supportive environment for LGBT students improves educational outcomes for all students, not just those who may identify as LGBT. The Dean of Students at Dominican University, Paul Rocanello, says that issues of sexuality are one of, if not the biggest issue of diversity on college campuses. Young adults who are trying to figure out who they are should have spaces where students can feel safe and supported. We should be supporting 100% and all resources on campus are willing to have an open relationship with students to figure out what support is needed. There's still work to be done to fix the gay stereotype, but Dominican prides itself on the efforts it makes to protect the rights of the LGBT community, to be safe and visible while embracing their identity rather than being belittled or erased. Thanks for listening. This is radio.dominican.edu.
All right, so now on to our last song of the day. This is Cadillac 3 with their song, The South.
Buckles, red clay and sand. My point ain't subtle here, I'm a southern man. Where the beer seems colder and the women seem hotter, where the world don't seem so damn modern, where a good old boy like me still has a chance. That's right. All this is where I was born. We'll be right back.
about the sound. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Carolina, don't you wanna get down and dirty? 'Cause Florida, I'm thirsty. Hit me with your Tennessee whiskey and crank it up loud. Lay back, crazy old timer, the sweet magnolia, dive bars and diners, oh yeah. Oh, and even if you're up north, come on down, come on down. Oh, it's all about the sound. Mama's Patsy Cline. Ooh, we're walking after midnight, singing Tulsa Time. Will the beer seem colder and the women seem hotter? Will the world don't seem so damn hotter? Hell, this is where I was born and this is where I'll die. Oh, that's right. Ooh. It's all about the sun. Mississippi, Louisiana, Carolina, don't you wanna get down and dirty? 'Cause Florida, I'm thirsty. Hit me with your Tennessee whiskey and crank it all out. Lay back, crazy old timer, sweet and long, you got bars and diners, oh yeah. Oh, and even if you're up north, come on down, come on down. Oh, it's all about the South. Come on.
Alrighty, so that was Cadillac 3 with their song The South. Anyone else catch that little shout out to Don Williams? I noticed it, of course, in the song, but that's when I realized it. I was like, oh, and I played a Don Williams song today, so it worked. That's cool. Alrighty, so obviously this song is about the South, and I really do like this song, even though I'm not from that area. It's pretty obvious. I was born and raised here in Northern California. So not from the South, but nonetheless, I still like this song. And I just scream out the chorus every time. I like how it flows. It kind of reminds me of when I was little and, like, you know how we would start to learn about geography of America and the states and whatnot, and there would be like that one song that our teacher kind of gave us to help us memorize the states. This song reminds me of that. Maybe I'm the only one, but that's what it sounds like. I mean, and it would have helped back in the day when I was trying to like memorize them. Just Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Carolina. It would have worked. Too bad I didn't have it in like the second grade or whatever. Okay, so now this is Jax's story time. That way it's not too much history and we take a little break from all this backstory stuff. And this will probably happen every once in a while, just warning you, because since I do listen to this stuff so much, I feel like I have so many stories and memories that like link to a specific song. So this is one of those times. So before the semester started, I went up to Cow Mountain with some friends of mine, and we went up for the day just for some target practice and dirt biking and barbecuing, and we got everything loaded in the truck and we are good to go. And I made sure, at least I thought I made sure, I was like, you guys, we have everything, we're gonna be fine, let's go, let's get a move on, let's hit the road. And we didn't think we forgot anything until we got there and realized that we had only 4 sets of earmuffs when there were 6 of us in total. So me and my friend Jimmy, or my friend Jimmy and I, whatever is the correct grammar, I don't know, they both sound right to me. We thought it would be kind and considerate if we let our friends have the earmuffs for the day. And that was the first and the last time that I will ever do that. I learned my lesson. So after like just 5 hours without earmuffs, I seriously ended up going deaf for the day. I'm not even exaggerating it. My hearing didn't fully come back for like 2-3 days after that. It was horrible. Like, you know how at first I was like, oh, it's nothing, it'll go away. And then when I woke up the next morning, I was like, oh my God, I still can't hear. Like, what have I done to my poor eardrums? It was a combination of when you have water in your ears combined with like ringing and then lots of fuzziness. And that thing that happens when, you know, you're on an airplane and then like the air pressure from like the elevation or whatever, when you take off or land, whatever happens, you know how sometimes your ears don't always pop. That's what it was like, all those things put together. So me and Jimmy are idiots. I really thought my ears were tougher than that. I thought they'd be like Superman when it came to bullets, but clearly my ears are very sensitive. Anyway, so since it was more than a 2-hour drive, because we were heading back down from Ukiah, playing music and singing, it was honestly the best way to pass the time, even if 2 of us were extremely hard of hearing. So I remember Jimmy put The South by Cadillac 3 on, and it's actually Jimmy who introduced me to that song a while ago. So, and he, I don't know why they gave the deaf guy like the role of being the DJ for the car ride, because I mean, it must have been way too loud for normal ears, because I could, every time Jimmy would turn a song up, I could see like everyone else in the car try to like slyly like turn the knob back down when he wasn't looking. So poor people, because I honestly, when he put The South on, I could hear it like faintly. So the fact that I could hear it and still realize like, oh, this is The South by Cadillac 3, I'm pretty sure it was way too loud for the other friends. So pretty much the friends who weren't deaf from shooting, me and Jimmy made them lose their hearing during the car ride back. And anyway, Jimmy and I were the only 2 who knew the song, and we started to sing, and that was my shining moment, you guys. I sounded like a rock star. I'm talking about like American Idol status, mainly because I couldn't hear myself singing. That's probably honestly why I felt like that. And that's one of the very few and rare times that I've actually sang that song, any song at all for that matter, with like full confidence. And it helped that Jimmy, who could barely hear, was also belting out the lyrics with me, and it disguised how bad I was doing. That's always nice. So eventually, in a few days time, my hearing was restored and I could hear everything perfectly again. And then I played The South like when I was like running errands or something, and I began to sing it, and then with my hearing back, it just wasn't the same. And I was like, oh dear, that's what I sounded like. Like, that's what they all heard. And so that's the story about that song. And let that be a lesson to never give away your earmuffs and to never sing out loud if you can't hear yourself. Because at the time when I sang the song, they were all smiling. And I don't know, there we go. I couldn't tell if they were laughing because I couldn't hear that. From what it looked like, they were just all smiling really, really big. So just, I don't know. No one should ever sing when you're going deaf, ever. So now let's discuss this recent band, Cadillac 3. They are from Nashville, Tennessee. Originally, they were known as Cadillac Black, but Black changed to 3, which makes sense since the band does consist of 3 guys. We got Jaron Johnston, Kelby Ray, and Neil Mason, and all three of them grew up together in Nashville, same schools and all that. Johnston does lead vocals and guitar. Kelby does some different things. He does bass, dobro, acoustic guitar, and vocals. And Neil Mason plays the drums, and he also does additional vocals. So at the start of the group's career through 2011 till 2013, Jaron Johnston, he actually co-wrote several songs for other mainstream artists, country artists only. He included, I think, which was it? Oh, he helped write with Neil Mason. He helped write Jake Owen's Day of the Golds and then Southern Girl for Tim McGraw. And he also co-wrote Keith Urban's You Gonna Fly. Then in the beginning of year 2013, after that experience with co-writing for the songs, they joined Big Machine Records and they began producing an album. And later that year, Cadillac 3 released their debut single, which was The South. And The South earned a spot at number 58 on the country airplay charts and got even more recognition when the trio performed it on an episode of the show Nashville. And you guys probably heard a lot of additional voices joining in during that song, mainly like kind of towards the chorus, of course, and then towards the end when they're all saying like, this is where I was born and this is where I will die, those voices. And those guest vocals were from Mike Eli of the Eli Young Band, Florida Georgia Line, and Dierks Bentley. So they kind of merged into the song, added a little something extra. And this band has performed on tour for Lynyrd Skynyrd and ZZ Top with their songs The Sticks and Tennessee Mojo, which are really, I love these songs in my opinion. Here's actually, just so you guys see what I'm talking about, here's a little piece of Tennessee Mojo. So this trio, I think they have a really, really cool sound because it is country and their lyrics are country, but their instrumentals are very, they're like really rock and roll sounding. So it just combines two pretty spectacular genres, pretty good combo. And actually, I saw an interview recently with them. I think AfterBuzz did a short interview with the group where they described their particular sound as country fuzz. Which to them, I think the girl who's interviewing them was like, well, what is country fuzz? And they described it as a mixture of what they grew up listening to. So from Skynyrd to Hank to Tom Petty and even Metallica. And I think you guys can really, I know I can. I can hear that unique formula in their music. So I do hope these guys get bigger. They haven't blown up yet, but I hope they do. Their music is definitely different from the majority of the other modern country out there these days. So hopefully we see more of them in the future. I'll keep my eye out on them. I like these guys. So we wrapped up the show with Cadillac 3. Very good way to end it, in my opinion. Once again, I'm your host, Jax, with Good Old Days for some country and southern rock and a bit of its history. So please go ahead and stop by next Monday morning here at Penguin Radio at 8 for more music. Until then, you folks have a good day, a great week, and I will see you next time.